In 2022, Kyla Scanlon coined the term vibe session to describe the peculiar economic phenomenon where data showed growth, but people felt miserable anyway. This concept catapulted her from financial analyst to economic thought leader almost overnight. In This Economy expands on this viral insight, exploring how our collective feelings about money shape economic outcomes as powerfully as interest rates or supply chains. The book has garnered praise from financial heavyweights like Morgan Housel, who notes in the foreword that Scanlon possesses the rare ability to understand both technical economics and human psychology, a combination sorely needed in a field that often struggles to explain why Americans remain financially stressed despite rising incomes. As Billie Eilish reportedly mentioned in a recent interview, "This book finally helped me understand why I feel anxious about money even when my bank account looks fine." The economy isn't just numbers and theories. It's a dynamic map of human behavior that guides our understanding of supply, demand, and market forces. Scanlon introduces the concept of an economic kingdom with different castles representing economic sectors. The Federal Reserve presides over the monetary policy castle, which influences inflation and labor markets by firing cannons, implementing policies that may or may not hit their targets directly. The U.S. dollar castle serves as a secret weapon with global implications, while the commodity castle forms a foundation for everything we interact with daily. Our collective feelings about the economy, our vibes, significantly influence economic outcomes. Consumer sentiment affects borrowing, spending, saving, and earning, which impacts prices across sectors. When we feel uncertain about the future, we spend less, which can create a self-fulfilling prophecy of economic slowdown. This circular flow of economic activity demonstrates how expectations, theory, and reality create economic vibes. When these three layers diverge, vibes get really weird. Scanlon describes economics as the dismal art rather than science, where valuation models are educated guesses and economic theories rely on loose facts. Consider gas prices. When they rise, consumer sentiment typically falls, creating a negative economic cycle. Oil impacts everything we buy through transportation costs, making it a fundamental economic factor. High gas prices create visible reminders of economic strain through bright neon signs displaying costs. While expensive gas doesn't necessarily cause recessions, it certainly makes people feel like they're in one. Emotions have always influenced economic behavior, from Keynes's animal spirits to modern behavioral economics theories. George Soros's theory of reflexivity, the feedback loop where beliefs influence market actions, which then reinforce those beliefs, exemplifies this connection. As Fisher Black noted, the price level and rate of inflation are whatever people think they will be, showing how expectations directly shape economic outcomes. Money, despite being central to our daily lives, remains a difficult topic to discuss openly. It's a social construct built on trust that most people find uncomfortable to talk about. Money serves as a commodified promise and societal glue that facilitates transactions, enables growth, and expresses convictions. Despite its everyday presence, its true nature remains elusive to many. Modern money exists primarily as digital information rather than physical cash. When you make a purchase, you're essentially transferring a bank's promise to pay from your account to someone else's. Banks operate on a business model built on trust and borrowing short-term through deposits to lend long-term. They function as government-sanctioned distributors of money, similar to exclusive franchise operators at a carnival. Fractional reserve banking allows banks to loan out the majority of deposits, keeping only a fraction in reserve. This works because not all depositors will withdraw their money simultaneously. If you deposit $100, the bank can loan most of it out. That's how it makes money. This practice evolved from goldsmiths who would issue paper receipts for gold deposits and began lending out more gold than they physically held. When you deposit $100 at a bank, that money becomes part of the bank's reserves, an asset, while your deposit becomes a liability, the bank's promise to pay you back. The lending process actually creates new money, as banks essentially generate funds through loaning out deposits. This creation of money is reflected in a bank's balance sheet, which tracks assets, what it owns, and liabilities, what it owes. Banks fail through insolvency, making too many risky loans, or illiquidity, when panicked customers simultaneously demand their money back. The 2023 Silicon Valley Bank failure exemplifies this. They borrowed short to lend long, but had no hedges against rising interest rates. When rates climbed and social media sparked a digital bank run, their vulnerability was exposed. The U.S. dollar functions as more than currency. It's an economic powerhouse representing America's massive GDP, over 25% of the global economy. This dominance makes the dollar the world's principal reserve currency, held by countries worldwide for international trade and economic stability. Despite concerns about de-dollarization, several factors maintain the dollar's global dominance. It offers the most transparent and liquid financial markets, it structurally absorbs the world's surplus from export-oriented economies, and the U.S. balance of payments system would be difficult for another country to replicate. Supply and demand is the intuitive economic seesaw that determines prices based on how much people want something versus how much of it is available. When demand is low and supply is high, prices fall. When demand is high and supply is low, prices rise. This principle operates everywhere, from the Pokemon Company printing 9 billion cards in 2021 to stop speculators profiting from artificial scarcity, to Taylor Swift concert tickets in 2023, where limited venue capacity and massive fan demand drove prices skyward. In any marketplace, sellers aim to maximize prices while buyers seek the lowest possible cost. Market equilibrium occurs where these forces meet. The lowest price sellers will accept and the highest price buyers will pay. Using grandma's banana bread as an example, the demand curve slopes downward, higher prices reduce quantity demanded, while the supply curve slopes upward, higher prices increase quantity supplied. Modern supply chains evolved from ancient trade routes like the Silk Road into today's complex global networks connecting suppliers, manufacturers, distributors, and retailers. While these sophisticated systems enable worldwide commerce, they're remarkably fragile. The COVID-19 pandemic exposed this vulnerability when disruptions caused shipping rates to soar to 25-year highs, with grounded planes, delayed shipments, and container ships backed up outside major ports. The pandemic created bizarre market distortions, like used cars becoming more expensive than new ones. Supply chain disruptions and semiconductor shortages limited new car production, while a simultaneous shortage of used vehicles created the perfect storm. Used car prices jumped 40% from July 2019 to February 2022, reaching an average of $25,000. Even more strangely, older vehicles appreciated more dramatically than newer ones. A 2009 Camry doubled in price from $8,000 to $16,000, while a 2016 model increased just 50%. The 2022 eggflation crisis perfectly illustrated supply and demand dynamics. Highly pathogenic avian influenza decimated chicken flocks, reducing the U.S. laying hen population by nearly 60 million birds. Simultaneously, supply chain issues disrupted chicken feed delivery, while consumer egg demand had been steadily rising. Media coverage amplified the problem, creating panic buying that further stressed supplies. Prices peaked at around $5 per dozen in December 2022, though adjusted for inflation, they remained below 2015 levels. After the supply chain crises of the early 2020s, businesses and governments should prioritize capital investment in infrastructure, upgrading equipment, improving technology, building larger warehouses, and enhancing logistics systems. Instead, investment often flows to trendier technologies like AI or cryptocurrency while neglecting fundamental supply chain components. GDP serves as the comprehensive scorecard of a country's economic health, measuring both total income and total expenditure on goods and services produced within its borders. It's expressed through the equation GDP equals C plus G plus I plus NX, where C represents consumption, G stands for government purchases, I means investment, and NX refers to net exports. Consumption encompasses what people buy, divided into non-durable goods, short-lasting items like food, durable goods, long-lasting items like furniture, and services like haircuts or medical care. This spending is fueled by three main sources: income from jobs, borrowing through credit, and savings. Consumer sentiment, how people feel about the economy, serves as a baseline input affecting all purchasing decisions. Investment represents money spent on things generating long-term economic benefits. Businesses buying new machinery, business fixed investment, people purchasing newly constructed houses, residential investment, or stores stocking inventory for upcoming seasons. Unlike consumption, investment creates productive capacity for future economic growth. Government purchases include direct spending on goods and services, from office desks to military equipment. This category excludes transfer payments, like stimulus checks, as those only enter GDP when recipients spend them in the economy. Net exports represents the dollar value of products bought from other countries, imports, minus products sold to other countries, exports. Fiscal growth through government spending or tax cuts can boost nominal GDP, but often relies on increased borrowing. This debt-fueled growth is healthy when investing in productive assets with low interest rates and stable debt-to-GDP ratios. It becomes problematic with unsustainable debt levels or when creditors lose confidence. GDP may not reliably measure our economy in today's tech-driven world. Our measurement methodology hasn't evolved with our changing economy. Does strong GDP indicate people are healthy and happy, or just spending money? Better measures might include real GDP per capita, economic output per person, or productivity, efficiency of labor and capital. Pursuing economic growth without limits creates perverse incentives benefiting primarily the wealthy while harming the environment and workers' well-being. Alternative economic philosophies challenge GDP-centric progress. Degrowth advocates reducing production and consumption in advanced economies. Ecological economics seeks sustainability within environmental limits, and post-growth suggests prosperity without perpetual expansion. Inflation represents declining purchasing power. Your dollar buys less than before, and your paycheck stretches thinner. In 2022, 7.5% inflation cost average consumers approximately $276 monthly. Though inflation decelerated from its 9.1% peak in June 2022 to 3% by June 2023, this disinflation means prices still rise, just more slowly. Headlines about falling inflation rates don't mean prices are dropping, only that the rate of increase has slowed. The Consumer Price Index, CPI, measures average price changes for urban consumers across food, housing, transportation, and medical care. The Bureau of Labor Statistics creates a representative market basket of goods and services by surveying thousands of households, then compares current prices to previous years to determine inflation rates. To calculate CPI, the Bureau takes the price of the basket in the current period, divides it by the price in the base period, and multiplies by 100. For example, with a pineapple cowboy hat basket costing $23 in 2020, $26 in 2021, and $29 in 2022, the CPI would be 100 in 2020, 113 in 2021, and 126 in 2022, showing a 26% inflation over 2 years. Personal Consumption Expenditures, PCE, is the Federal Reserve's preferred inflation gauge. Unlike CPI, which measures what consumers directly pay, PCE captures consumer spending from the business and government transaction side. PCE and CPI diverge for three key reasons. The scope effect: PCE includes indirect expenses, like employer-provided insurance; the weight effect, different weighting of basket items; and the formula effect. PCE uses chain weighting that adjusts more frequently to consumer behavior changes. The inflation pizza illustrates how inflation permeates every ingredient in our economy. From June 2022 to June 2023, flour prices rose 12.1% due to drought and the Ukraine war. Cheese increased 1.1% from labor shortages and cattle costs. Salt jumped 4.3% from supply shortages. Lunch meats, like pepperoni, went up 4.9%. Vegetables climbed 2.1% due to labor shortages and climate change. And fats and oils surged 8.7% from geopolitical conflicts and rising fuel costs. Inflation stems from multiple complex causes, primarily supply-demand imbalances, but also includes price increases by firms, fiscal and monetary policies, and international trade disruptions. The New York Federal Reserve calculated that supply chain bottlenecks alone drove 3% of total inflation, estimating that U.S. inflation would have been 6% instead of 9% at the end of 2021 without these constraints. Corporate pricing behavior contributes significantly to inflation, though not necessarily from pure greed, as some suggest. Companies find raising prices much easier than selling more products to increase profits. Procter & Gamble's earnings showed they sold less but charged more, maintaining margins while keeping investors happy. Nestle, Kimberly-Clark, and PepsiCo all raised prices by 10 to 13% in early 2023. The labor market is vital because meaningful employment that provides adequate income and healthcare is essential to living well. The post-pandemic period represented a pivotal shift in work perspectives, with workers reevaluating their priorities amid the Great Resignation. Millions demanded better wages, working conditions, and work-life balance, from Amazon warehouses to Hollywood sets. The unemployment rate is calculated by dividing the number of unemployed people actively seeking work by the total labor force, unemployed plus employed. By early 2023, the total labor force had fully recovered to about 166 million people from the April 2020 low of 156 million. A low unemployment rate, 3 to 4%, generally indicates a strong labor market with plentiful opportunities, while higher rates, 6 to 7%, suggest fewer jobs and downward pressure on wages. The labor force participation rate, LFPR, measures the percentage of working-age people, 16+, who are either employed or actively seeking work. A higher LFPR indicates more people are participating in the workforce, which is generally positive for economic output. When this rate falls, it signals people leaving the workforce, potentially creating labor shortages in certain sectors. The labor market has transformed dramatically over generations. While baby boomers could often buy houses straight out of college, work for the same company for decades, and support families on single incomes, today's reality is starkly different. Modern workers face challenges that highlight a fundamental lack of respect in many employment contexts. Wage growth has remained largely flat, while costs like childcare have skyrocketed. The federal minimum wage in the U.S. has remained stagnant at $7.25 per hour since 2009, despite historical context showing it peaked at $11.69 in 2019 dollars in 1968. If minimum wage had kept pace with productivity growth, it would be approximately $24 per hour today. This stagnation has created severe affordability problems. There's no place in America where minimum wage workers can afford a two-bedroom apartment without working nearly 100 hours weekly. Modern society values work unevenly, placing higher premiums on white-collar knowledge work than on blue-collar manual labor, despite the latter often requiring significant education and expertise. This mirrors G.K. Chesterton's observation about undervaluing dandelions. It is not familiarity, but comparison that breeds contempt. Society's tendency to look down on essential manual labor jobs manifests through lower wages, longer hours, and general disdain for work that most needs doing. The inflation of the early 2020s had a silver lining. Workers finally gained leverage to demand higher wages. Even those laid off in 2022 quickly found new positions, often with better pay. The reservation wage, minimum acceptable salary, rose to $75,811 by March 2023, up from $73,667 just months earlier. The American Dream, defined by James Truslow Adams as the dream of a land in which life should be better and richer and fuller for everyone, has become increasingly unattainable. Many younger people believe the housing market needs a complete reset for them to access home ownership and stability. Even Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell acknowledged the need for a housing market recalibration during the 2020s housing bubble. Housing has become dramatically less affordable, with homes now costing 4.5 times the median family income compared to the historical 3 to 3.5 times. This affordability crisis stems from supply constraints and zoning issues. Economist Edward Lehmer argues in Housing is the Business Cycle that housing is the most critical sector in economic recessions, making residential investment a key GDP component. Home purchases happen in two ways: all cash payments, nearly one-third of purchases in July 2022, or financing through mortgages. For mortgages, buyers typically make a 20% down payment and finance the remainder, with the total cost being the home price plus interest payments. Most U.S. mortgages are 30-year fixed-rate loans, making the interest rate crucial to affordability. Mortgage rates fluctuated dramatically, bottoming around 2.5% in 2021 before surging above 8% in 2023 as the Federal Reserve hiked rates to combat inflation. This dramatic increase priced many potential buyers out of the market while advantaging wealthy cash buyers. Between 2020 and 2022, the average new home price jumped from $405,000 to $547,000, requiring $28,000 more for down payments and nearly doubling monthly payments from $1,343 to $2,628. We simply don't have enough housing for several critical reasons. Restrictive zoning policies and local regulations obstruct construction. The market has shifted toward larger, more expensive homes and rental properties. The percentage of new single-family homes under 1,400 square feet plummeted from 70% in the 1940s to less than 10% in 2020, while homes under $300,000 dropped from 70% of sales in 2010 to under 10% in 2022. Institutional investors have dramatically increased their presence, buying more than 1 in 10 homes sold over the past decade, double the pre-2008 rate. Meanwhile, the rise of short-term rentals, Airbnb listings have doubled since 2020, and pandemic-driven work-from-home demand, accounting for 60% of price increases between 2019-21, have further constrained supply, creating a vicious cycle of housing scarcity. We've created a problematic system where middle-class stability depends on real estate speculation. As Argentinian blogger Maya Mindel notes, by protecting the housing investments of the wealthy, developed nations have created stratified incomes, reduced opportunities, and worse outcomes for everyone. This approach fuels inflation. Home price gains in the early 2020s created $9 trillion in wealth and drove roughly a third of inflation during 2020-2022. Markets primarily function as corporate financing instruments, helping companies and individuals raise money. The stock market allows companies to sell ownership stakes to the public, raising capital for new projects or debt repayment. The corporate bond market enables companies to borrow through issuing bonds, essentially IOUs, promising repayment with interest. The stock market and economy are fundamentally different entities. While the economy measures GDP growth through consumer spending, government purchases, investments, and exports, the stock market represents individual companies and how they deploy capital. At its core, stock ownership means buying a slice of a company's apple, owning a piece that hopefully increases in value over time. Share prices fluctuate constantly based on investor sentiment. When investors believe a company will perform well, they buy more stock, pushing prices up. Conversely, negative outlooks lead to selling or shorting, driving prices down. Stocks can generate returns through dividends, profit distributions, retained earnings, reinvested profits driving growth, and capital gains, selling shares at a profit. exchange-traded funds, ETFs, bundle stocks to track indices, commodities, and asset classes, reducing the risk of holding individual securities. Like farmers planting multiple crops to hedge against failure, ETFs offer diversified investment exposure against market uncertainty. Despite their massive holdings, ETF providers like BlackRock and Vanguard don't directly control the companies they invest in. They're merely holding stocks in products sold to investors. The U.S. stock market has become highly concentrated, with public companies declining from 7,300 in 1996 to 4,600 today, while private equity-backed companies grew from 1,900 to 11,000. By 2023, just seven tech stocks, Apple, Meta, NVIDIA, Amazon, Tesla, Microsoft, and Alphabet, comprised 26% of the S&P 500 and generated over 110% of its gains. The efficient market hypothesis states that prices reflect all available information and stocks trade at fair value, but modern markets increasingly reflect artificial interests rather than fundamentals. The 2021 GameStop and AMC phenomenon exemplified this shift, as stock prices were bid up for purely speculative purposes with no connection to business fundamentals. Bonds represent debt issued by companies, governments, or municipalities. When you purchase a bond, you're lending money to the issuer for a specific time frame in exchange for interest payments. They typically carry lower risk than stocks because they provide regular coupon payments and bondholders get paid before shareholders if a company fails. U.S. government bonds are considered risk-free because the government is unlikely to default. This risk-free status means they're safe, liquid, and stable, minimal rate fluctuations in the short term. The risk-free rate serves as the financial North Star, influencing everything from stock valuations to mortgage rates. The Federal Reserve occupies a unique position as a pseudo-governmental entity, reporting to Congress but operating independently with its dual mandate of price stability and maximum employment. Unlike government agencies, it isn't funded by taxpayers, but through interest earned on government securities and bank fees. The Federal Reserve was essentially born from J.P. Morgan's frustration. During the 1907 banking crisis, when multiple bank runs threatened the financial system, Morgan personally issued emergency loans to struggling banks. Eventually, he declared this wasn't his responsibility as a private banker and leveraged his influence to push for legislation creating a central bank. The Federal Reserve operates through a decentralized structure with 12 district banks across the country, ensuring power isn't concentrated solely in Washington, D.C. The board comprises seven members, nominated by the president and confirmed by the Senate. Members serve staggered 14-year terms, expiring in even-numbered years, preventing any single president from appointing the entire board and maintaining political independence. The Federal Open Market Committee, FOMC, the Fed's monetary policy unit, consists of 12 members, the seven Board of Governors members, plus five of the 12 Reserve Bank presidents. Headed by the Federal Reserve chairperson, it meets eight times annually, every 6 weeks, to determine economic direction. The Fed employs two primary monetary policy approaches: contractionary, raising rates, shrinking the balance sheet, to slow the economy, and expansionary, cutting rates, increasing the balance sheet, to accelerate it. These policies are implemented through several key tools that influence money supply and lending conditions throughout the financial system. The Fed funds rate, known by different names internationally, aims to adjust the cost of money by targeting the interest rates banks charge each other for overnight loans. When inflation runs high, the Fed raises this rate, making borrowing more expensive for consumers across all lending products, which reduces spending and slows the economy. The Fed's effectiveness hinges on two critical factors. First, people must believe in its power. This credibility is essential because expectations drive behavior. If people expect inflation to rise, they'll accelerate purchases and demand higher wages, creating a self-fulfilling prophecy. Second, the Fed's toolkit must actually work, despite being indirect and imperfect. the Fed's job resembles climbing a mountain, sometimes taking gradual switchbacks and other times attacking directly. Monetary policy requires careful navigation of economic terrain with uncertain outcomes. The Fed's 2% inflation target originated somewhat arbitrarily from New Zealand's Labour Party finance minister Arthur Grimes in the 1980s. This target isn't necessarily rigid. It's more a directional goal than a constant requirement. The Fed's job resembles climbing a mountain, sometimes taking gradual switchbacks and other times attacking directly. Monetary policy requires careful navigation of economic terrain with uncertain outcomes. The Fed's 2% inflation target originated somewhat arbitrarily from New Zealand's Labour Party finance minister Arthur Grimes in the 1980s. This target isn't necessarily rigid. It's more a directional goal than a constant requirement. Despite our economic challenges, transformative opportunities exist across multiple sectors. Healthcare can become more accessible and equitable through policy reform. Immigration offers demographic revitalization and innovation. Housing affordability requires rethinking zoning and construction approaches. Education needs reimagining to prepare people for future work. Clean energy presents both environmental salvation and economic growth potential. Beyond specific policy solutions, we need to embrace an abundance mindset, or what Martin Gurry calls an adventure mindset, that values innovation over fear. Rather than viewing our economic challenges through a lens of scarcity, we need an abundance mindset. This perspective sees potential in collaboration rather than competition, recognizing that economic growth isn't zero sum. By embracing technological innovation, renewable resources, and human creativity, we can create systems that benefit everyone. The abundance mindset rejects artificial constraints and focuses on expanding possibilities through better resource allocation, knowledge sharing, and inclusive growth strategies that lift all participants rather than just a select few. Progress requires political will, public demand, technological advancement, and global cooperation across climate change, healthcare, and housing. While the path forward seems challenging, humans have demonstrated remarkable innovation capacity. The key is reconnecting with each other and the world around us, avoiding cynicism in favor of what Maria Popova calls vigorous, intelligent, sincere hope, not blind optimism, but hope bolstered by critical thinking. As Ian McGilchrist notes, the world we experience is affected by the kind of attention we pay to it. Our collective energy shapes our future. We must also accept that suffering is intrinsic to the human condition. As Mary Gateskill writes, while balancing imagination, which Ursula K. Le Guin called an essential tool of the mind, with real-world data, people are the economy, so let's make the economy about people.